We do have a quorum, so we'll call the meeting of the Ways and Means Committee to order. Thank you for showing up. And we have a couple of things preliminary. The minutes from February 11th to 2010. Representative McNamara moves.
With my mouth full, I'll move the minutes.
Okay, Representative McNamara moves the minutes. Any questions, corrections? Thank you for reading them carefully. To all those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And carried. Okay. Then we have Representative Murphy. Is she here? Okay. Want to join us? We have some motions that we need to make. Representative Huntley. We have the Senate file before us. Would you like to move the Senate
Chair,
file?
I would move Senate file 2168 to be recommended to pass and just go to the general register or?
Yeah.
And to
so Representative Huntley moves that Senate file 2168, the second engrossment, be moved to the general registry. And then Representative Murphy, I understand you want to work off from the House language. Is that correct?
Yes,
so
Mr. Chair.
So, Representative Huntley?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Do we vote on that first? Or?
No, we could. That would be the final motion.
Yeah, okay. Then I would move that we amend the Senate language with the House language from House File 2680.
So, the amendment is to delete the Senate language and insert the House language. And the House language that appears in House File 2680. That's the language that was passed last night. Representative Murphy, do you have an amendment to that amendment?
There is the Amendment A1.
Do you want to adopt that first?
That would get the bill into the order. This has a little technical language to capture dish money, a little smaller, further reduction of the county grants. And on the tracking sheet, you'll note that we are reducing the number of FTEs being recognized in the fiscal note. Okay. And then the second article is the appropriations article.
Okay, let's then move.
I will move the A1 amendment.
The S?
S 2168 A1.
So Representative Huntley.
And yeah, then, Mr. Chair, I have an amendment to that amendment.
Well, we got two or three amendments right now. So.
Okay.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I think what we have to do is first vote on the House file into the Senate language, given how the amendment is written here.
You're correct. So let's go back to the motion that inserts the House language in there. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed and carried. Now you can have an amendment, not the amendment, but
okay. Mr. Chair, I would move the 2168 A1 amendment.
And then you have an amendment to that, you said?
Yes, I do, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
And that is on page 2, line 30. Delete $11,560,000 and insert $9,938,000.
With parentheses around them?
Yes.
Okay. Is that your only?
And then I also have on page 5, line 10, delete the $11,560 in parentheses and insert in parentheses the $9,939,000.
Does everybody have that amendment, that oral amendment? So you can incorporate that into your amendment?
Yes.
Okay. And one additional amendment that I'd like to get incorporated, if I may, add to this amendment that would direct staff to make any technical corrections. The amendment would read that staff are directed to make technical corrections. So Representative Holberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm assuming this looks like a technical correction because it's matching up with the language in the written portion of those sections. Is that what we're doing, Representative Huntley?
Representative Huntley.
I would have to ask Representative Murphy to answer that.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Murphy.
Could Representative Fulberg repeat her question, please?
Well, Representative Huntley changed the $11 million to $9 million, and I'm seeing in the, like with the First Amendment that he did on page 2, if you look on page 3, line 2, those two numbers match. So I'm assuming that the oral amendments of Representative Huntley are technical in nature and in making the numbers match up in those various sections.
Mr. Chair and Representative Holberg, that's correct.
Okay. All right, thank you.
And Representative Hoppe?
Is that worked on?
Okay. Yeah. Okay, that's, and then why don't, Bill, can I wait till the end to make this motion? Yeah, we'll do that at the very end, okay? So I'm not including the direction for the staff right at the present time, but we'll do that at the end. We have the A1 as corrected by the oral amendment or oral corrections of Representative Huntley. Let's adopt that. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
And opposed and carried. So, Representative Murphy, we have your bill in the language that I think you want. Do you want to give us a very brief description of it?
Yes, Mr. Chair and members. First of all, I want to thank you for holding a Friday afternoon meeting of the Ways and Means Committee. And I thank you all for being here. And I'm going to try and condense my testimony so that we're not going to be here too long. But I do want to begin by saying thanks. A lot of people have been working on this effort, this proposal to bring a temporary restoration or partial restoration to general assistance medical care. So I want to make sure and thank Dan Pollack, Kate Pruszek, Laura Sales, Randy Chun, and Mr. Walls. I want to make sure and give a shout out again to the Department of Human Services. They've been working with us since November, I think, to bring this proposal together. I want to thank Representative Matt Dean and Representative Tom Huntley, who have been, we've all been working together to try and find a solution that works and to get a bill signed. The basic proposal that is here is the same as was introduced back in December. Last night in the Finance Committee, we did take action to remove both the HMO and medical assistance surcharges as well as the language relating to MCHA. And I think that has brought you know, a fair amount of relief to some of the conflict around this legislation. We've been working closely with the administration on this proposal, and earlier this week did learn that that was an area of objection with the administration and then with our colleagues in the House. And because we would like to get a signed bill, we thought it was important that we listen carefully, and so we've removed those surcharges. In the original proposal, we had had the notion of an accountable care organization. We've also scaled that idea back. That is an idea that's been discussed both in the Minnesota legislature and in federal health care reform. But we aren't quite ready to launch a fully scaled accountable care organization. And so we rested with a county-based coordinated care option where a county and provider group could come together and care for a discrete population for a fixed amount of money. And that option remains as a voluntary option in this proposal. We've listened carefully to the county organizations on the county share provision that was in the original proposal. They had a philosophical objection to the 10% county share, and they asked that we consider instead either a cut to county program aid or to the county block grants, and we have instead included a cut to county block grants in this proposal. We've also listened carefully to their concerns, and we've brought that number down from about $29 million to about $18 million, which matches up more closely with what they think they would be experienced in terms of costs under the veto. And they still don't love this, but they're working closely with us in hope for you know, further consideration as we consider the budget as we go forward. There is a promising mental health care delivery reform in this proposal. We worked closely with the Department of Human Services on that. It's based on an East Metro pilot that provides rapid access to psychiatric care, and we believe that it will reduce the number of inpatient hospitalizations related to mental health and quicken the discharge of people that are hospitalized for that purpose, and it does show a modest savings on the fiscal note. This is a 16-month temporary proposal. In the proposal, we're asking a lot of the provider community. They are taking deep cuts. The hospitals are taking deep cuts, as well as the doctors and nurses that care for people in hospitals and clinics. But it does significantly reduce the costs of general assistance medical care, and that has been a primary goal of ours and one that we understood was a goal of the governor's. By doing this temporary fix, we do shelter property tax and health insurance premium payers from the cost of shifting costs to related to uncompensated care that would come from the veto. And that's not just a Hennepin County and Ramsey County protection. 4% of the original GAMC program payments went to Anoka County, 3% went to Dakota County, 2% to Olmsted County, Stearns and Beltrami County, and millions went to Washington, Wright, Itasca, Blue Earth, and Becker. That's to say that this solution is a statewide solution, and I think that's important for all of us as we consider this. I think most importantly, we extend coverage to the poorest and sickest Minnesotans, and I think that comports with the values of the state of Minnesota. I want to share with you just one story from the hearing that we had in Health and Human Services Policy, and that's the story of Caleb. He came and testified before us. Caleb's a newly returned Iraqi war vet. He is homeless and clearly, I think, struggling with reentry into his life in Minnesota after serving in the war. And he is a GAMC recipient. He's homeless. And he came to the hearing and asked that we consider how important this program is to him. And I can tell when I looked at him and listened to him how important it is going to be for his recovery. So I hope that you'll support the proposal today, and I'm happy to answer your questions. Thank you.
Okay, questions, if you would, please. Questions. Yeah, Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Murphy. We all want to extend our appreciation for all of your hard work and bringing this bill through the process. And a lot of changes have taken place. It's very difficult to try to institute something like this, and the process has kind of seen that. I just had a couple of questions that deal more with financing and the financing, how we're paying for this, even though that might make more sense in Representative Huntley's committee. Since the changes were done in finance, I want to just bring those out now and have you have an opportunity to kind of update people on what the changes are and how they affect the different hospitals, clinics, and HMOs. The surcharge was taken out on the hospitals, HMOs, and MSHA in finance last night. Could you just talk about how that affects the overall financing of the bill, how much money that was, and how that affects the individual hospitals, and kind of how that plays out, and who's happy about that and who's not?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dean, I will explain that. And if we get lost in the explanation, just stop me because it's a little complex. When we introduced the proposal, we had identified an MA and HMO surcharge as a financing mechanism to pay for a part of the ongoing temporary program for general assistance medical care. The surcharges are federally allowed financing mechanisms that allow us to draw down federal dollars, and we would have drawn down roughly 85 to 100 million federal dollars to help support this temporary program. The surcharges are pretty inflexible in that they collect money based on hospital revenue, and they pay money back to the hospitals based on their MA patient mix. So if a hospital does a lot of medical assistance, they'll see an increase in their rates and thus an increase in their bottom line. But if a hospital doesn't do very much medical assistance, then they're going to pay in based on their revenue, but they're not going to receive the repayment in medical assistance because they don't care for a lot of medical assistance patients. And further, if they have a lot of GAMC population, they would see a reduction in their payment rate there because we are reducing the rates of payment in general assistance medical care. The surcharges were pretty unpopular. They provided a funding mechanism for us, but there are a lot of hospitals that paid in more than they received in return. And it was a major objection that we heard from a number of hospitals from different parts of the state. This isn't our typical rural-urban split. It's not a large hospital, small hospital split. It's about payer mix. The HMO surcharge, Mr. Chair?
Can I just ask a question?
Yes.
And that is on the finance, if I may interrupt. Mm-hmm. How much federal monies would that have brought into this play?
I think, Mr. Chair, it was between $85 million and $100 million.
Thank you.
And we had looked at the surcharge because we know that we already have the MA surcharge in place in law and the HMO surcharge in place in law. And we also have an MA surcharge that was adopted in 2003 as a part of the administration's budget. So we thought that it might be a workable option. But in the end, in this proposal, it caused a lot of objections. And so instead of using the surcharges, we are putting together funding. And this is where this gets a little complicated. So if we keep GAMC in place, we continue to draw down drug rebate money that we have been in the past. We would lose that money if GAMC goes away. So we keep the drug rebate money. We keep disproportionate share money that comes to GAMC as a result of keeping the program in place. By not auto-enrolling the population into Minnesota Care and the Health Care Access Fund, we keep $160 million in the general fund. We're using that $160 million, and then there's about $60 million left in the GAMC account.
And I want to have the fiscal staff explain the relationship with the Health Care Access Fund. So if maybe Mr. Marks can, or somebody could, John, would you just give us a sentence on why that is a savings to... That you can access this money. And it goes back, I believe, to the February forecast.
Mr. Chair and members,
you can identify yourself for the table.
Oh, I'm sorry, John Walls, House Fiscal Staff.
Thanks, John.
With the veto of the GAMC program, there was a large population of healthcare GAMC recipients that were going to be put into Minnesota Care and create additional expenditures. If we institute a temporary program and take those people back out of Minnesota Care, there's going to be savings to the Healthcare Access Fund. And that, if you look on your, I believe, the fiscal note that was included in your packets, there's a Healthcare Access Fund savings. I believe the net effect of it is about $185 million savings to the Healthcare Access Fund. No, excuse me. If you have the fiscal note, you turn to page 9 of 20. About two-thirds of the way down the page, there's a line that says Section 14, Temporary GAMC Program Impact on Minnesota Care. And you see year-by-year savings to the Healthcare Access Fund. It's $68 million in 2010, $185 in 11, $27 million in 12, and $4 million in 2013.
So this is, if we had didn't have this fix, this would require the general fund to pay back the Healthcare Access Fund. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, there's a provision in law that for a certain time period, the general fund is responsible for keeping the Healthcare Access Fund solvent, and I believe that provision runs through fiscal 2011 and then expires. Because this population would be shifted to Minnesota Care and create an extra financial burden, the fund was to go negative by $110 million. So that would require a $110 million transfer from the general fund into the Healthcare Access Fund in 2011, which is reflected in the forecast. In addition to that, the Healthcare Access Fund makes an annual payment to the general fund of $48 million, unless there is not the sufficient funds to do so. Taking this GAMC population back out of Minnesota Care would allow... both the $48 million annual transfer from the Healthcare Access Fund to the General Fund to occur and would not require the additional $110 million from the General Fund to make it solvent. And so the General Fund savings would be $158 million in this biennium if the
healthcare access fund is kept solvent by doing something else with the GAMC population.
Representative Dean, I interrupted those, but this isn't an easy solution. Do you have a follow-up question?
I do. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Murphy, I am looking at the spreadsheet that everybody looks at when they go through their packet and they say, how is this going to affect my hospital?
Right.
And this, I would take it, is updated after the Finance Committee last night. Is this accurate to what's before us now?
Representative Murphy. Representative Dean, that's correct.
And Mr. Chair and Representative
Dean.
Murphy, can you just describe basically what the difference is between the two columns and the numbers that are represented on this Minnesota Hospital Cert, the payment model? It's governor's veto and unallotment versus parcel restoration. Could you just maybe just describe what those numbers are? The ones on the left look predominantly negative. The ones on the right look positive. Could you just describe to members what that actually kind of means to their local hospital?
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair and Representative Dean, I think this is the all-important question. And when we saw the runs based on the surcharge formula, that's what made people have heartburn. The bill as it is today, we're not having to pay through a formula that is dictated by how we use the surcharges. So in this case, we're looking at what the net effect of the veto would be on the hospital's payments, and then what the partial restoration would be. And if I understand this chart correctly, you would take if we're looking at ADA, they would lose $20,000, and then add that. And they're getting $8,500 back under this proposal. So,
Representative Dean, the net loss then would be not $20,000, but $11,500.
Yeah. And Mr. Chair and Representative Murphy, they're still not getting back what they would have otherwise gotten, so that it's how much better each one is doing.
Yes.
With this, so it's not a net. This is
right.
Just a trajectory up
right.
or down.
Right.
And this is how much better they would be doing other than the left.
Right.
And I think Representative Kelly and the Health Finance Committee, the Health Policy Committee, asked for a third column to be projected, which would be the net effect of hospitals under current law if these folks were moved into Minnesota Care. Has the department provided that information, or have you seen anything from that?
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dean, we have not seen those runs yet. We did get this document that you have, again, is from the Hospital Association. I know they have tried to get the factors that they need to be able to make that column work. I don't have it yet.
Okay. Thank you. That's all I have.
Representative Huntley.
Mr. Chair, and for the members, currently for the 16-month period we're talking about, if we just continued on with General Assistance Medical Care, the cost of that would be $500 million. What we're going to spend here is about $285 million. So the providers are going to see that decrease in what they get reimbursed, but it won't go to they'll still get something, but it'll be a lot less than the $500 million that they were supposed to get.
I think from the very beginning, Representative Murphy stated that this is a partial fix. Representative Bunn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe this is for fiscal staff, but along the lines of Representative Dean's discussion. Do we know if we were to follow the governor's proposal and roll them into the program, though, what do we know about the current estimate of when we would go into deficit in the program and therefore have to start unenrolling current enrollees under that program?
And I
ask that, Mr. Chair, because as soon as that starts occurring, these same hospitals, while they would initially receive a net benefit of maybe higher payments for GAMC enrollees under Minnesota Care once they're rolled in, as soon as that goes negative, they would then be disenrolling current adult members who are on that program. And that may, in some of our districts, particularly the ones that I referenced in my district, they would start taking an even larger hit than they would be in terms of the GAMC losses. So I wonder about the timeline of all that and how that fits with the kinds of runs we've been requesting, which I also agree with Representative Dean we should be seeing.
Mr. Walls, can you try to answer that question?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bunn, as I mentioned earlier, the provision in statute that that has the general fund prop up, if you will, the Health Care Access Fund, or keep it solvent, is only in effect through 2011. Mm-hmm. And so beginning in 2012, there is a problem that needs to be addressed. The forecast assumes, and these fiscal notes assume, that if we do a temporary GAMC extension through 2011, and you don't have a permanent fix, that those people will again start to migrate to the Health Care Access Fund in 2012. This, we're only talking about a temporary program. Mm-hmm. So there will need to be adjustments made in the Health Care Access Fund. Either with or without the program, it goes negative in 2012. Mm-hmm. And there is no general fund support required in law to keep it solvent.
Mm-hmm. And Mr. Chair, if I could just speak to that briefly, and I think this is where members of the Health Policy and Health Finance Committee have tried to think through the policy, not for this temporary fix. I mean, we've tried to think it through for the temporary fix, but it's just been that the time frame has been pretty compressed. So as we're thinking about the future of our public programs, we know the population currently served in general assistance medical care is pretty sick. We know 60% or so have a chronic mental illness, up to upwards of 80% are either chronically mentally ill or with issues of chemical dependency. And so while we know Minnesota Care is an available program, we also know that part of that population is going to struggle in that insurance, in an insurance product, right, where they have to pay premiums and stay enrolled. The auto enrollment plan of the administration says, okay, for 6 months, the general duration of someone's enrollment in GAMC is 6 months. So if you're in GAMC and are auto enrolled into Minnesota Care, your time frame in Minnesota Care will last up to 6 months, and then you're going to have to go back in and enroll in Minnesota Care and begin to pay premiums. And there's been efforts to try and figure out how would we do that to help this population stay enrolled in Minnesota Care, but we haven't been able to work out all of that policy. So the net effect of the administration's policy, I think, is that it is a more short-term solution in terms of coverage. And on my bad napkin math, I think looking at the fiscal note and trying to figure that out, that auto enrollment would cost roughly $254 million. And this is a temporary program for 16 months, and it costs about $285 million. So it is a good deal for the state in the short term. It is a lot, we're asking a lot of the provider community, because they are taking significant rate cuts in order to provide and extend coverage for this population. But it also gives us the time to figure out how to better tailor our health care programs to deal with this population while trying to contain the costs and growth of the health care programs in the state of Minnesota.
And to answer your question a little bit, if you refer to the one sheet that's in your packet, it's entitled Temporary Extension of General Assistance Medical Care. Way down at the bottom of that, you will see state fund impact through the biennium. The second from the bottom line, health care access balance without the temporary GAMC fix, you see is in 10 is 166, zero in fiscal year 11, and goes to negative in the 12 and 13. And even with the fix, you'll see that we stay positive in this biennium, but continues into the negative into the next biennium because of if we do that enrollment. So it's not a pretty picture either way, but it's a little bit of sunshine here, I guess. So, any other discussion? Representative McNamara.
Just a couple of short ones, Mr. Chair. Just kind of a follow-up to Representative Dean's question about the third column, for lack of a better explanation. Mm-hmm. I understand this is going to the floor. If you, from either the association or one of the agencies, heard if we'll actually, because naturally our concern is wondering what one looks best for our local hospitals and our constituents. Have you heard from them if we'll have it? I'm assuming we'll have it before Tuesday on the floor.
Representative Murphy?
Mr. Chair and Representative McNamara, I have not asked that question this week. So I hope that we'll have it in time for the floor session on Thursday, and I will work to get it.
Okay. Representative McNamara, that's part of the frustrations we've been having for the last year or so on other information that is difficult to come out. And I don't know the reason why, but it is difficult. Representative McNamara?
Well, it seems, Mr. Chair, maybe the mood has switched a little bit more to the positive just in the last few days. I don't know why, but it seems a little bit. So maybe we'll see it come from somebody somewhere. But one other one that I'm wondering about that is a little.
You're not implying that we only get information if they want to give us information?
No, Mr. Chair, okay, I would not make implications on a Friday afternoon like that. But on a more serious note, I've heard some discussion about that actually sexual predators like folks that we house up in Moose Lake actually would be compensated better for care for them potentially under GAMC than if they were just treated like under medical assistance or something. And can you explain kind of what I've really heard it like third hand and really trying to understand if it's true or not.
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair and Representative McNamara, when we set about this course, we narrowed eligibility for GAMC, and one of the populations that is no longer eligible for GAMC are those sex offenders at Moose Lake.
Okay, thank you.
Representative McNamara, or Representative Mariani, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Murphy, and actually Representative McNamara touches on my broader issue, and I understand, Mr. Chair, we're not a policy committee.
Sure.
However, this is my only crack, and so I'll try to be very just brief on it. The language before us does, first of all, it's a temporary frame, but the language nonetheless speaks to policy changes around eligibility, enrollment procedures, services covered, payment rates. I just want to make sure I'm understanding this. Are we doing permanent changes in those categories as a course of policy, or are we making necessary policy changes within a temporary proposal here, which then, I guess, for me, then assumes that afterwards we will revert back to existing policy frames here.
Representative Murphy.
Am I correct in that?
Mr. Chair and Representative Mariani, this is a temporary program, and the rates and the eligibility are tied to the temporary program. Current GAMC statute exists, and the funding has been canceled. I think the question for us to answer is really, can we sustain GAMC as it was going forward? And one of the things I think that we've discovered in our work in the policy committee and in the working group and in our work bipartisanly is that GAMC has been sort of a holding place for a lot of people, and numbers of people that have been currently served in GAMC would be eligible for other coverage. So we're making sure that women who are pregnant are enrolled in Minnesota care, in medical assistance instead of staying in GAMC. And we're trying to improve, again, our efforts to get people through the disability determination and get covered in medical assistance and not stay in GAMC. We added language last night in the Finance Committee to make sure that vets who aren't getting coverage with veterans benefits are working through that disability determination so they can get the proper benefit that they've earned by serving in the military. So I think that we have work to do going forward to make sure that GAMC or whatever the program is in the future is working to serve the population being covered by it. And I think because it's been a place to catch lots of loose ends, it has not been as, there hasn't been enough policy attention paid. And it's one of the reasons why we've seen a growth in the cost that is unlike other places. But the other reason why there's a lot of cost growth there is because this is a very sick population. And I think we've all, you know, we all recognized and acknowledged that. So for those who aren't, that don't need to be in GAMC, we should get them into Minnesota care or medical assistance. But for those who aren't going to navigate that system well, then we should make sure the program is meeting their needs. We need to do a better job of coordinating their care and keeping them as healthy as possible. I think we need to look at stable housing with services, because that's a key component of this population. There's a lot of homeless people in this population. And if they were stably housed with services, they probably wouldn't be in the hospital as much as they are. So we have a big job ahead of us. So I think neither A nor B is correct. I think C is the right answer, that we need to continue to do some reform.
So Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Rosa Mariani.
So, Mr. Chair, so we don't have permanent, at least as captured in this bill, permanent policy decisions made, but nonetheless, perhaps the silver lining, if you will, of this whole experience is that it set us on a path toward modernizing, if you will, some of those important policy decisions in future work. So thank you, Representative Murphy, for
Representative Holbrook. Sorry, I skipped you. I didn't see your name on the list.
That's okay, Mr. Chair. I was trying to, my question was similar to Representative Mariani's, and so just I tried to listen very carefully, and this is not an area in which I serve on any committees, and it's very confusing. Mm-hmm. So I almost hate to even step into the the realm of it. But just in a layman's terms, are you telling us that none of the identified costs of delivering service to this population that you know will save money and are in this bill, none of them are permanent to help reduce the cost of the tails of serving this population?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holbrook, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that we've defined this and drawn it as a 16-month program. But I think the idea of a county provider care coordination effort, which was a part of the bill that we worked on and a part of the idea that Representative Dean has worked on, I think that'll move forward. And I think you're going to see more efforts around that. So I think that will transcend the 16-month program. The mental health reform that's in this bill, I think that will transcend the 16-month program. But I wouldn't be... I really need to be clear about this for the people that are here. I don't think that it would be the state policy to continue to extend a 50% rate cut to the providers going forward. I 50% of the rate that they're being paid in the public programs is too low. And I don't think that we would continue that. So I don't think that would be a part of the ongoing program. And I also don't think that we would continue to cut county block grants to fund this program going forward.
Right, Mr. Chair, that wasn't my... When I heard you talk about we're going to work harder to make sure that vets that are on this program, state-funded program, get the paperwork and get on veteran care or whatever it is. Okay, if you're doing that, then there should be some long-term savings for the state. Is there an ability with the way this bill is structured that we will realize some medical cost savings in the tails? I mean, I'm very concerned about our budget situation, and we've done a lot of one-time things, and this appears to be another major one-time thing. And at what point are we going to say that we really have to concentrate on structural reductions to spending? And there's got to be, in all of this consternation about what's gone on with this population, there's got to be some people that came forward with some ideas to save money. And to what degree are they reflected on a permanent basis in this bill is what I'm interested in.
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair and Representative Holbrook, I think that what you're talking about, what I hear you asking me is what other reform efforts are ongoing that will impact this population as well as other populations that are in our public programs. So, for instance, when I talked about the effort to improve our county-state efforts to get people with disabilities through the disability determination into the right program, that was a piece of legislation that Representative Huntley carried last session, and it shows the savings to the state. And so we're trying to, we talk about that, we acknowledge that, and we're trying to apply that same thinking for vets. But it's a newer idea, so we need to get the machinery for that correct. We have talked since 2007 and 2008 about the idea of using very intense care coordination for chronically ill populations, and I think you see that iteration in here as well. But this is not the only place where that's happening. I mean, we're seeing that in our work with the healthcare home, the work that the Department of Health has worked on baskets of care, and now the idea of accountable care organizations coming through the legislative process. So all of those taken together will not only help this population and our state budget for GAMC, but in medical assistance and in Minnesota care, and hopefully in the commercial programs as well.
Okay, maybe I'm going to try this on a concrete level. Maybe it's a Mr. Walls question. Does the fiscal note associated with this bill book any savings in the out biennium for medical costs to the state?
Yes, a small savings in the mental health reform.
And how much is that?
Mr. Walls, can you give us a...
Mr. Chair and Representative Solberg, there are generally two savings to the state of Minnesota, and one is from the mental health savings that Representative Murphy suggested. And if you have the one pager, it's down in the probably lower third part of the page to where it says general fund impacts, and it shows mental health urgent care savings. There's a small amount of general fund savings for that, a portion of which we use to help fund the program. The 239 savings that you see in the bottom line is a savings to the general fund. In addition to that, if you again refer to the fiscal note, again on page 9 of 20, under section 14, there is a savings to the Health Care Access Fund or Minnesota Care of $27 million in fiscal 12 and $4 million in fiscal 13. And to give you a brief explanation of why that happens, when you eliminate a program or create a new benefit and people are going to move to a program, they don't all move at one time. There's a slow migration. And so the forecast assumed this migration would occur, and they projected what the Healthcare Access Fund would pick up in terms of cost. If we extend the GAMC program and then it ends abruptly again in 2012, the people on Minnesota Care from that GAMC program, from the GAMC enrollees, will be slightly less because there's going to be a delay in their migration again. And so what you basically see is a slower migration and perhaps costs that might be picked up as uncompensated care by care providers throughout the state of Minnesota.
But I also have an understanding in your testimony that there are other things that we'll probably see in the future bill that comes through that addresses some of the things that are in here that will be ongoing as well, some of the vet stuff and so forth. I think that's what you and I are both asking the question of.
I guess it kind of goes to what I've been told, but I don't know, is that the GAMC coverage is far more extensive than medical assistance coverage. So in other words, if you're on general assistance, you get more things paid for than if you're on medical assistance. Is that true or not true?
So if we have someone else behind us, do you need to answer that? Randy?
Mr. Chair, Randy Chen with House Research. Representative Holberg, in general, medical assistance would have the more generous benefit set than general assistance medical care. For example, general assistance medical care doesn't pick up some of the long-term services, and there are also some other service exclusions.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you.
Any other discussion? Representative Huntley?
In terms of permanent things, hopefully permanent, one of the suggestions that was brought to us was from Hennepin County Medical Center and from Regents Hospital, and there's about $16 million that they were able to get from the feds that don't show up in the fiscal note. They do show up on that list of what hospitals are getting, but they figured out a way to, between the two of them, to capture about $16 million extra dollars for those two hospitals.
I do have a couple of corrections, too. Okay, but I don't want to cut off questions. Representative Dean?
Oh, I'm sorry. I was, Mr. Chair, just following Representative Huntley's comments, I think that structurally, when we look at Minnesota compared to other states, our reimbursement rates are so incredibly punitive. We get ripped off to the high heaven compared to almost every other state in the country. We're making things harder for our providers. So this is not a permanent fix that they can't afford to see these patients as it is. So,
Representative Dean, at some point I'll share a little history of one of the reasons why. When Dave Bishop and I were out in Washington, I'll tell you the reason why. I won't take your time now.
Well,
there's some history that we know about that.
I know that the state of Florida, they are actually suing the government, and their reimbursement rates are about 30% better than ours. And we'll see how that goes. But
in a very short, it changed overnight, and ours didn't change, and other states did. And the reason that was given is that Newt Gingrich said he needed the votes from those states.
I'm all ears for the history lesson. Okay. So,
Representative Holbrook.
Well, and I just want to clarify something. There was some comments about getting information. I think you were referring to the department, but I think this document actually was from the hospital association. So I want to make sure that the impression was not left that the agency was slow with this. I think the hospital association did this, and it's probably a lot of work on their part.
But I think it indicates that the agency is probably even slower than what we think it is, because someone else has to do the work. We have a couple of corrections that I need to make as an amendment. Page 28 of the House, that it is now a House file 2680, the second engrossment. We have a redundancy on line 2324. It says "and budget." That's a redundancy, so I would move that we strike the words on line 23. The last and the on line 24, the word budget, the first budget. So I think that staff has pointed out that that's a correction. All those in favor of that correction signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. And then, Bill, was there other things that other than this regular amendment that I can? Okay, then I would move that we adopt the following amendment, that staff are directed to make any technical corrections that they find. Any questions on that? Those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Representative Huntley renews his motion that Senate file 2168, as amended, be recommended to pass and placed in the General Registry. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
And carried.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative.
I have one more to make, and that's
sure.
I would move that we table House File 2680.
Yes. That is a move that House File 2680 be laid on the table. That's in our possession. Are those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Carried. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Well, just to...
we can have
maybe, Mr. Chairman, you want to draw attention to Monday's schedule that's on your agenda.
Yes. Monday, again, we are working with the Office of Management and Budget and the Governor's Office. We will be having a session jointly with the Finance Committee Monday evening sometime. And we will continue to coordinate that and refine that as we find more information from the Department of Management Budget. Representative Carlson?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, just to clarify, as you point out, we've been working...
Just a second, please.
We've been working with Commissioner Hansen, and the reason that we won't be meeting on the governor's budget that morning was that the governor chose to announce the budget at 11 a.m., and so that kicked us into the evening.
Instead of 10.
He tried to get him to do it a little earlier.
Okay, any other announcements? The meeting is adjourned.